morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. The new True Charlie Wu is the fourth and latest independent film from Dr. Bob Pondillo, who's an associate professor of electronic media communication here at MTSU, and also our very own Martin Scorsese, or Quentin Tarantino, or... or name your favorite auteur. That's who he is. That's who he am. And Charlie Wu is going to be shown from 11 to 1 multiple times during that time period on Saturday, April 17th, in its grand debut at Premier Six Theater in Murfreesboro. It's at 810 Northwest Broad Street here in Murfreesboro. Plus, there'll be a special multiple nighttime showing of Charlie Wu from 7 to 10 p.m. that very same evening on the first floor of the Bragg Mass Communications Building, complete with live music, refreshments, a silent auction, and a chance to meet and greet Bob Pondillo and all of the actors who were in there, the cast and crew, many of whom are MTSU students and alumni, as is Bob's wont. And he's here today to talk about the making of this latest fine flick, which I've seen multiple times myself. So how are you?
I'm well, thank you, and thanks for having me again, Jen. And good to see you. Always good to be here.
Always good to have you on the show.
Thanks.
So what is with the new True Charlie Wu? What does he do in this movie?
Well, it was, as I may have mentioned, I think I mentioned to you one time when we just spoke privately, this really is my story, and I think it's a story of a lot of people, really. It's a story of a guy in this case. Could be anybody, though. It's really a story-driven movie, not a character-driven piece. It could be the new true, you know, Jenna Logue. It could be the new true Sammy Smith. It could, you know what I mean? It could be,
right.
It's anybody. Mm-hmm. It's everybody. This young man, in this case, is stuck in a job that he hates, and he can't or won't get out and follow his dream. He does have a dream. And so one night, Charlie has a dream. I mean, he has a vision of what he wants to do with his life, but he has a dream then that the cameras and what have you, that the movie goes into. So we go inside his head and into his dream and watch this dream. And this is the tug of war that Charlie is having with himself, because, you know, we're told that dreams are just really us talking to ourselves about whatever problems we're having in our lives. At least that's one way to look at a dream, I suppose. And it's a good device to use to tell the story, so that's why I'm doing it.
And there are some special effects, and we have the Siegel High School cheerleaders, a marching band, we have a barbershop quartet.
A lot of things happen in dreams that seem incongruent, yeah, exactly. And I try to pick up on those things that, you know, oftentimes in dreams people have the sense of falling, falling away, falling through the clouds and stuff. So we have a special effect in there with Charlie is falling into this strange dream world from his bed, and I think it's good. And that, again, as you mentioned earlier, are MTSU students, in this case two students who have graduated from MTSU but stayed in touch, and I really loved their work when they were students here. I asked, would you mind doing these special effects for us, and they said yes. So it's really you know, MTSU students, graduates and graduate students that are, you know, in the RIM program, among others. So
we're talking about the people who do the audio,
right,
the continuity,
right,
the cinematography, the lighting,
right,
some of whom have had experience with their own little home movies, and some of whom have had a little bit more experience than that.
Sure.
But nonetheless, as the director and writer of the piece, that you have to guide them and be, in essence, a one-man film school, because we don't have a film school here at MTSU.
No.
It is neither a major nor a minor. There are scattered classes in film critique, if
right,
you will.
There's a film studies minor, yes.
Right. Across different disciplines. There's a politics and film course for people in political science and so forth. But there is not like a UCLA film school where you go to specifically get a degree in movie making.
However, that is changing. And I think to a large degree because of the stuff that our students are... My students and others are from the electronic media production side and the recording industry side are so, you know, just very interested in doing this. And because of the success we've had, we've had a couple of films that have made it all the way to Cannes.
Yes.
The film festival in Cannes.
It's My Name is Wallace and Wait, both of whom starred your friend David Lawrence, who is a professional L.A.-based actor.
Right, exactly. And so that says something for the quality of our students, I think, because more students work on this than professionals. We do call in like a professional production manager, who, by the way, is an MTSU graduate.
Yeah.
And in fact, just about everybody associated with the movie, with the exception of the actors, were MTSU graduates or are currently undergrads or are graduate students or what have you.
It's the MTSU movie mafia.
Yes, exactly. That's what we try to do. And eventually, I think we will have a film, or they don't call it film anymore because we're really not shooting film.
Right.
We're shooting digital video. And so the idea would be to call it like digital cinema,
right,
or something like that.
Okay.
So, or young filmmakers or young digital cinema makers or something.
And the changing technology and the lightness of the technology actually would make it easier for you to, or for the College of Mass Communication, right, to spread interest in and develop courses in this sort of thing, because it's ubiquitous. It's,
yep,
everywhere. It's, mm-hmm, available everywhere from Radio Shack to the most expensive store you want to go to.
Sure.
And if you can take a picture of someone or take a movie of someone with your cell phone, then it's a few steps up from there to showing people how to do it with professionalism and polish.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. It's the proliferation of all this new technology is just amazing. From the cell phones to these cameras that are these three-chip RGB cameras that are just take beautiful. I mean, they, to me, of course, I'm not a videophile, but to me, they look like, you know, as good as anything I see on television or in the movies or something. And they cost $300, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not a big Panavision camera or anything like that. So, yes, you have that technology thing going on, plus editing systems now oftentimes come with the computer you buy, you know. So there's cheap or relatively inexpensive editing systems. And you have outlets as well. There are outlets like YouTube, MySpace, name some more, Vimeo. I mean, there's just bunches and bunches of places where you can stick your movie, or whatever you want to call it, on the web, and people can see it around the world.
Or if it's reality based, if it's journalism, the iJournalist,
yeah,
the CNN, MSNBC, mm-hmm, you know, name the network, are accepting, mm-hmm, with certain conditions and restrictions, amateur video from people who just happened to catch the tornado as they were going down the road.
Right, right. So all that is happening. And within that swirl, you know, within that milieu, whatever, within that, we've got a lot of young people that are just, you know, amazingly skilled and talented at equipment, mm-hmm, knowing buttons and switches and dials and, you know, how things work here and what have you. They don't really have too much to say, but they sure know the equipment.
Yeah, but you've got to teach them story, plot, narrative, character,
right,
development,
right,
all of that. Because,
right,
if you don't have something to say, it doesn't matter how many switches you can flip.
Well, and that's what I say to them. I say, you know, when you look at the, you know, the field now, when you look out, take a long look, you see that everybody has buttons and switches and dials and cameras and microphones and all that. So if everybody, including you, has this, what will make your production stand out from the other ones? And then there's that kind of deer in the headlight look, you know.
It's called an idea.
Yeah.
It's something with brains and heart and soul.
Yeah. Yeah. You take what's in your head and attach it to your heart and tell a story in a structure, in a narrative structure that I try to explain to them. And but I think, and I do that in class all the time, of course. But I think when they're on the set, when we're in a room, for example, in Charlie Wu, we went to DR&A Studios in Nashville. To record this, to digitally capture this,
right,
film, or film is a sort of a catch-all term. It's not no longer,
right,
film, but you get the idea.
You needed more space than what you used in your prior three films, which,
right,
you know, had a sort of intimacy to them.
Right. This was much bigger, and even though we have huge studios here at MTSU and a very large television stage, it just didn't have something called a hard white psych. We needed this 60-foot long, about 40-foot deep cyclorama, mm-hmm, and that's a, like a, how would you put it? It's just a There are no 90-degree angles. It's all...
It had to look absolutely seamless in order right. for the image you were trying to present of people in this dream space
right.
to work, because they had to be they had to look as though they were in the ether,
right,
standing
exactly.
on nothing.
Right. So, and since we found this little stage area, or actually it's a very large stage area, it was like a hangar, like an airplane hangar, and it had exactly what we needed, this hard white psych, which means the whiteness extends from the top of the psych down to the floor, but there's a curvature from the floor up to the walls. Mm-hmm. So it's just very, yeah, so when you look at it, there's no point of reference. You can't see up, down, sideways. Right. It's just all white mm-hmm. all around you. And so that was where we chose to shoot the thing. And because of that, it was very expensive. It cost us almost $5,500 that week
yeah.
to be in that space. And I tell the kids, you know, every day this is costing us over $1,000 to be in this space. And we are in battlefield conditions. We are up against it. We have to make this movie. Please check your egos at the door. I don't want to hear, hoo-hoo, look at me, I'm making a movie. It's let's get this thing done. We've got a focus. We've got a story that we've got to tell. And we've got to tell it the best way we can from our hearts, from our minds. And I tell you, they do it.
Well,
they were astounding. I love those kids. They're just great.
That's an important lesson for the future. If any mm-hmm. of them, you know, get to L.A. and they become members of the Directors Guild, the Writers Guild, the
sure.
Screen Actors Guild, any of those unions, because you cannot fart around and hold up people on the set, because there are grips and lighting people and all kinds of people, makeup and hairdressing,
yeah.
who are depending upon you to get this done in a timely manner. And if you have a tizzy or a neurotic fit, you're holding people up. They're getting paid all the while that you're having
right.
your to-do.
Yeah.
And you can't hold up production like that, because people's right. livelihoods depend on this.
Well, that's true, certainly in L.A.
Right. Yeah.
But it really does come down to, and this is one thing I learned after doing these four films now, is it's about management. It really is. That's what movie making is, at least on the set. It's managing the set.
That's why it's a director's medium.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody's got to be saying, stop, go, you know, wait, quiet, you know, that type of stuff, or everybody
nice
will be talking. Yes, exactly. And everybody's got an opinion, of course. So and the cool thing as well, it is a director's medium, if you want to call it that. I never look at it that way. I want it to have a singular vision. I want whatever story we're trying to tell, you know, come from a point of view, mm-hmm. But also stay open, because I don't have a lock on creativity, and I got a lot of creative people around me, so I want to hear what they have to say, you know.
So you would allow for a certain amount of improvisation, or only from professional actors like David Lawrence?
Yes, of course I would allow for that, but I would also step back and ask my assistant director, Brian Harstein, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Brian is going to graduate in a couple of weeks, you know,
right.
But a brilliant young man. And I would say, Brian, what do you think of this? I was thinking of doing it this way. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And he will tell me, or I'll ask some other, one of our grad students in sound. I'll say, I need this type of thing. How can we do that? And really, it's a series of problem solving. It really is an intellect. You know, you don't look at film. Everybody thinks it's just, oh, look at them, they're so cute making their movie. And, you know, what really counts is all my research. And don't get me wrong, I write books as well, so I do research too.
Right.
But there's a lot of intellectual energy that goes into this, a lot of problem solving to make movies work, to make anything work, and a lot of focus and attention. And so there's much to say about, I mean, just in terms of the academic exercise of making a movie, there's a lot of it going on when you think about it. So
it was either Samuel Goldwyn or Sam Spiegel, I don't remember which. I think it was Samuel Goldwyn who said, if you want to send a message, call Western Union, back when people actually sent telegrams. The telegram
right.
no longer exists, of course. But this is a message film, but it's not a deep, heavy message film that will, you know, send you, you know, screaming for the latest reality TV show to give your brain a rest. I mean,
that's true.
You put this in a very entertaining format.
Right. I try to make it accessible, as they say. And, it's a story that I think we all go through if we're sensitive human beings, and that is, you know, you'd stop and take a look at your life and say, my gosh, why am I so sad? Or why are things not working out for me? Why do I have this job that I hate and I refuse to let go of it, even though I know I should? A lot of people, you know, get in that situation. I was one of them, so I had that problem. And I was in the broadcasting industry for, I don't know, 30 years, 33 years.
Right.
And one night I had a dream, and in that dream a woman floated toward me and said, be somebody else before you're 40.
And in Charlie Wu, it's a lady who comes with wings, who comes at you sort of like Emma Thompson in Angels in America, you know. She's really is this kind of sylph-like figure.
Yes, right. And she says to Charlie, be somebody else before you're 30. I thought when I heard that line in my dream, I thought, oh, this is great. I got to remember this. I have to use this someday in something. And it really is the centerpiece of the movie when you think about it, that thought anyway is. And it's counterintuitive. I mean, you look at it and you say, well, what does that mean? How can you be somebody else? You can't. You have to be. Well, it's about changing. Okay. You know, it's like it's saying to be who you are, you've really got to change
right.
who you really are.
Well, so, that's what you say about artists. You say about this actor or this singer or whoever, they're constantly reinventing themselves, and that's mm-hmm. how they stay fresh. Well, that's what Charlie is trying
right.
to do.
Right. And there's a scene, there's a little sequence in there where the villain, the antagonist says to Charlie, you know, you'll never get out. You'll never get out because it's too hard, isn't it? It's just too hard. And you're too afraid.
That's
and you
David
don't want
Lawrence.
To change yourself. And I'm telling you, that's really what it is. We, you know, we live in a culture that mm-hmm. that holds money up, that celebrates money, that celebrates you know, financial gain and all that stuff. I'm a capitalist, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying, but I'm just saying that sometimes we are completely unbalanced because of that.
We associate money with emotional stability.
Yeah, exactly. And what the movie says, we're not breaking new ground here with some great new idea. It says, you know, be your authentic self. Find your authentic self, follow that thing that drives you, that dream that drives you, and the money will come. You'll have enough money. And I say this because it's me. This is absolutely true.
Yeah.
I was in a business that paid me a lot of money. I mean, a lot of money. You know, morning radio pays a lot of money. You could make upwards of $200,000 working in
keep
morning
those advertisers
radio.
Coming in, and you can do it.
Yeah, exactly. And so it just shows you how much money is being made in broadcasting and what have mm-hmm. you, just in one day part. Mm-hmm. But I made that money, and I never felt happy. I never felt as though I was contributing to anybody's good except the owners of the station that made a ton of money, making millionaires more millions. There was just something, I was disconnected. I really felt disconnected. And I knew it was killing me. It was sucking my soul away. It really was. This isn't for me. I can't do this anymore. I'm getting too old, those kind of things, you know. And so I made the choice of going back to college.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've been out of school for almost 30 years. So I go back to college and get my master's, and I'm encouraged to go on and get my PhD. And I literally changed my life. The old life that I knew, everything, all the cues, everything that I know, all the skills that I have, put them away. They're gone. And now you have to start over. You're like a babe, like a baby, you know. And that's a frightening thing to a lot of people, and I understand that. We try to show that in the movie, too.
But there's also something irresistible about someone who has an unwavering passion for what he or she is good at and mm-hmm. really wants to do. And in that way, Charlie Wu is really a person, a fictional person, albeit, mm-hmm. to hold up to these kids who are
right.
working on the movies with you. Charlie could just as easily be saying to them, or his gospel choir buddies who are fighting for his soul, could just as easily say, look, you know you're not in LA, you know you're not in New York, you're not even in Nashville, so what? Go for it anyway if you love it.
Well, yeah, I always tell the kids that too. You want to make movies? Make them. I mean,
make
what can
them
I
here.
Tell you? Have you noticed that, I've noticed anyway, that Warner Brothers hasn't called me. I don't know why. They haven't picked up the phone and said, hey, Bob, would you like to make a movie? But I want to make movies. And if you want to help me, I sure would like that. I sure would appreciate that. So that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We get together and try to figure out, how do we do this now? And do it in such a way that is real. I mean, that people will sit in the theater, or sit on, look at their television screens or whatever, and suspend their disbelief for a few minutes. to just to get into the story. And how do you do that? Well, you have to have a great story,
yeah.
And you have to have great actors to be able to pull the story off, and really tremendous technical people that are the real power behind everything. You know, they're watching. We're watching everything that these actors are doing, with the knowledge that we have to put this together in some type of narrative format. And that was my biggest fear. I didn't think the thing would cut together linearly, that it would, you know, that you could be able to follow it. And it turns out it worked out pretty well. There really is a sense that these people are traveling in one direction, even though it was shot completely out of sequence.
Yes.
And
most movies are shot completely out of sequence.
Right. Just to save money, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
And this is a short film, and right. I know you don't live for awards, but you do enter your films in film festivals, and this one has gotten some attention as My Name is Wallace and Wait did,
right.
Your second and third films, which were shown at the Cannes Film Festival,
right.
The prestigious Cannes Film Festival in France, and this one has gotten it has won Best Comedy Short at two film festivals, the Smog Dance International at Pomona, California, and the 15 Minutes of Fame Film Festival in Palm Bay, Florida.
Right.
And it won the Remy Award at World Fest in Houston, which is the oldest
independent
film festival,
right.
In the country.
Yeah, before Sundance, before Tribeca, before some of the biggest festivals that people know about, there was World Fest. So, and there was a lot of, we had like 2,400 entries, mm-hmm. And we got in. Isn't that something? And that's, to me, just getting in is a win. I don't really care if we win anything. I just want to get seen. You know, that's very important to me. Because when you think about it, how many people, half dozen people, seven, eight, nine people, mm-hmm. are those that decide whether or not you win an award?
Right.
And we live in a postmodern time. Who's to say that this is better than that or this? Just getting in, though, and being seen is let the audience decide. You know, that's what I say. So.
An official selection is what you, when you get
really?
Into a film festival, you are called an official selection.
Yeah, right. And that's what I'm looking for. If we can get into film festivals and just get seen, I'm just delighted. Winning is nice, but I'm not into that so much. I'm more into getting seen. So
now, yeah. Even though this is a 110% College of Mass Communication, MTSU, people production in a lot of ways, you did have some outside new friends who came in, and you conducted a search for a great gospel choir who would be would sing Charlie Wu a sort of siren song,
yes.
Trying to tell him to follow his heart. So let's talk about those
sure.
folks.
Well, first of all, I'll step back and tell you I love gospel music. Not Southern gospel so much, but Black gospel, or Black Southern gospel, I guess. Mm-hmm. I like the way it lifts you, the way it makes you feel something. It makes you really feel something.
We're talking about hand-clapping,
yeah.
Amen, Shirley Caesar, Clara Ward kind of gospel music.
Exactly. Really, that kind of, you know, just makes you stand up when you hear it. I love that stuff. And I want to make it clear, he's not the characters are not singing gospel music. They're singing gospel-like music.
Right.
So it's got that, you know, that drive, but it's we're not singing about Jesus or the Lord or whatever, you know.
Or any particular religion.
Or any particular religion. But this is, however, they do wear gospel, you know, they wear robes.
Choir
robes and the whole thing. And I was lucky to find this guy, Scott Spring, who out of Antioch, Tennessee, who's got his own, he's like a force of nature, Scott Spring.
Yeah.
He's got his own funk band and what have you. And he's just a funny guy. Mm-hmm. And he's a great singer. I was thinking, you know, like when you think of types, what are you looking for? I was looking for like a Ray Charles-y kind of type.
Mm-hmm.
And in Scott, you have somebody that's, you know, not that, more like a right. big Baptist preacher.
Ray sings with pain in his voice because he had been there and done that.
Right.
Scat sings with more joie de vivre.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, he's great to watch, and he's a lot of fun. And I asked him to help, and he said he would. And then it took a while to find the female singing lead, and I found a Sissy Crutcher. Believe it or not, I found her online.
Yeah.
At like Facebook or something, one of those books.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard her sing, and I thought, this is it. I need, because I was looking for a almost like an Aretha Franklin voice, you know, one of those big, exciting voices.
Mm-hmm.
But the character, the personage, the person that's herself, had to be this loving, sweet kind of encouraging woman, and that's
which,
the part
which
of
she is
yeah which she is in the movie, and she is in general too. She's a high school or a junior high school teacher, Did you know that, Sissy?
No, that's why it took a while for her to get back to me when I called her. Yeah.
She's a junior high school teacher. And she's great. She's just a sweet and just amazingly talented young woman. Mm-hmm. You look at this and think, how come, why didn't people know her? She is so good. And she's got a couple of albums out and stuff. Of course, we live in the Nashville, greater Nashville area. So we're going to find a lot of talented people like that.
And you didn't know what Scat told me. He told me what part of what impressed him about you was that despite his relatively limited amount of acting experience, he has tons of singing and performing experience.
Oh, sure. He's been on some of the biggest recordings you can imagine.
Yeah. But relatively little, just very few acting credits. You took a chance on him that he would respond to your direction based on what you heard in his singing, and he appreciated the fact that you went with your gut.
Oh, yeah. Well, you could tell. I mean, I can tell anyway. I look at him, and it wasn't just his singing. I saw him at the Carnton Plantation in Franklin a couple of summers back, and I noticed how he was talking to the crowd. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a very likable, like I said, force of nature. He's a funny guy and says funny things and interacts with the crowd very well. And I knew he could do it. I just knew it.
He sang to me over the phone.
Oh, he'll sing to anybody. He sings to me when I call him. He's weird. He's a weird guy. A great guy. I really love him. Anyway, so I'm pretty sure he's going to be at the premiere, and I'm very sure, I think, that Sissy will be there as well. But then we had the problem of getting a gospel choir. How are we going to find a full gospel choir?
Right.
And we literally went to gospel choirs around the area here, and because of some time constraints and other problems we had, we lost some time somewhere for some reason. I can't even remember now. We had to bring in studio singers in a Nashville studio and have the studio singers sound like a gospel choir.
Yeah.
And then we brought in actors to mouth, to lip sync that. So those people you see in the movie are actors pretending to be a gospel choir and doing a great job.
And doing it very well.
And but there was one guy in there, Jannard Cross is his name. Wonderful guy. Jannard is a great, fabulous, graduated from MTSU.
Tall, slender fellow.
Yes, yeah, and a funny guy, very funny. And a youth minister and all sorts of things. Got him to help out, and he was very helpful in trying us to round up, sort of wrangle our gospel choir. And he's a great guy, so he's terrific in it as well. I'd love to work with Jannard again, too.
Okay. Now, this is the first time on April 17th that your film will have had a big, full-out premiere at an actual studio being shown on the big screen the way it was meant to be seen, instead of just popping the DVD in the computer and watching it that way. What does that mean to you?
Well, I've been to film festivals where I've watched the Wallace and Waite and what have you up on a big screen, but this isn't a film festival. This is a premiere, and I've never had anything like that. And it really wasn't, I didn't think I was going to do it either, but a couple of public relations kids, students, came to me, Paul Bernardini and a few others. Marcy Hinton's public relations, the PRSSA, the Public Relations Students Society
of America.
Of America, something like that. And they came and they said, Dr. P, we want to help you with this. This could be one of our projects. Okay. And I'm thinking, well, sure, why not? And what I love about it is that, the PRSSA, or Public Relations and Advertising, come out of the journalism department.
Right.
So with this movie, we've got RIM, we've got Electronic Media Production and Journalism, and we've got journalism and the public relations and advertising. We've got the entire College of Mass Communication involved in this.
You hit all the disciplines.
All three are involved, and I'm just very proud of that. And mostly kids. Although I did, Bob Wood, who's a fantastic musical score person, writes great music. He did the score for us, and he's one of my colleagues at MTSU in the RIM department, recording industry. And Cosette Collier did the sound design, and she is another, wonderful teacher, professor in RIM. So I had a couple of colleagues, 30 undergrads, 6 grads, and maybe half dozen or more folks that have graduated from MTSU and are just sort of alums that have all come together, and we made this movie. And it's great, I think.
It's from 11 to 1 on Saturday, April 17th at Premiere 6, 810 Northwest Broad Street in Murfreesboro. Mm-hmm. And the nighttime showing from 7 to 10 p.m. on the first floor of the Bragg Mass Communication Building. The tickets for the daytime premiere are $8 for admission only or $10 for admission plus a copy of the Director's Cut DVD.
Right.
At the nighttime premiere, admission is $10 per person or $20 with inclusion of the DVD.
And let me also say, the reason that is, I wish I didn't have to charge anything, but we're still $20,000 in the hole with this movie.
Most of which was your money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, me and my wife, God bless her, I'm telling you. Well, what would I do without her? But she said, yeah, go, do it, do it. If you don't do it, you'll be depressed. Go do it. So, but it's still, you know, it's her money and my money as well. And we just want to pay it off. After
right.
we get this 20 grand out of the way, well, I'll give them away. I don't care. I'm not here to make money. I'm here to make movies,
right.
really. And that's what I like about it. So, yes. However, that $10 that you'll spend will get you into the theater and a copy of the film that you can take home.
And concessions and refreshments will be available there. You'll be able to meet and greet members of the cast and crew, including
right.
Bob himself. Maybe we'll have some cheerleaders and high school marching band music there.
I hope so. The cheerleaders from Siegel High School and the band from Siegel High School, Randy Rohde and Debbie James. Mr. Rohde's the band director. He
yes.
was very helpful, and the band boosters from Siegel High were very helpful.
And you can meet David Lawrence, Mr. Nugatorius himself.
Yeah, he'll be there.
In all of his Hollywood glory.
Yeah.
That's April 17th, and Dr. Bob Pondillo. If you want more information, call Bob's office at 904-8465, that's area code 615, or send him an email at pondillo@mtsu.edu. You can buy tickets on the day of. Just show up. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here.
Thank
Bob.
You, Dan. Always a pleasure.
Same here. This is MTSU on the Record. Please join us at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget you can check out the podcast at your leisure any old time at mtsunews.com. And we're also available on iTunes.